We are almost done the book of 1 Thessalonians, and I decided I would break the sermon into a couple of parts so that we would not have an eternal sermon this morning. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 12 to 28. Of course, we're not going to do all of that this morning. Now we ask you, brothers and sisters, to acknowledge those who work hard among you, who care for you in the Lord, and who admonish you. Hold them in the highest regard in love because of their work. Live in peace with each other. And we urge you, brothers and sisters, warn those who are idle and disruptive. Encourage the disheartened. Help the weak. Be patient with everyone. Make sure that nobody pays back wrong for wrong, but always strive to do what is good for each other and for everyone else. Isn't that good? That's just how he's wanting to finish this letter up. A little bit of conflict in the Thessalonian church. He wants them to live in unity, and this is what he wants for them. This text reveals that there were interpersonal relationship problems in the church. Yeah, big surprise, right? A church with relational problems, right? The thing is, we will obviously always have issues between people. Our responsibility is to minimize the destructive influence of having our values in conflict. We all have conflicting values, all of us, with each other. Your value system, if it perfectly matched mine, you would be wonderful. To me, maybe not to anyone else. All right, just clarifying that, The first question we must ask is to whom Paul is primarily addressing in these words. Some say he's addressing just the leadership. Some say it's the leadership and the entire congregation. I mean, clearly there's some things there. Regardless, one must also attempt to consider the leaders that Paul was addressing. You know, he's writing to leaders here, but our intent, you know, when we first read it, we think, oh, pastors. Now, they didn't probably have a pastor. So we have to not read our view of church into the text. Now, the stuff's still applicable, but we need to try to, first of all, think about what he was writing to first there to those people. They were likely elders, in the sense that we have elders, but not pastors in the way that we have pastors today. Furthermore, the leaders might have been trying to address the issue of some of the probably poorer people in the congregation who were not working but expecting the church to care for them because they were out. You know, Jesus was coming back and they had to tell everybody, and so I didn't need to work. Who needs a job when Jesus is coming back? And if Jesus doesn't come back, the rich people in the church will support me. That did lead to a little conflict in the church, as you could imagine. And this is probably the tension that's going on between the leaders and some members of the congregation. So the need for admonishing, the need for helping people see their responsibilities. As the leaders attempted to fix the situation, they may have made matters worse because of their limited experience in leading a Christian congregation. You know, when you first try leading Christians and you don't have experience, you make lots of mistakes. And then after you gain that experience, you still make mistakes. You just don't make as many. You just make different ones, hopefully different ones. So, you know, your heart has to go out to these people he's writing to. The first thing he says is honor your church leaders. Now we ask you, brothers and sisters, to acknowledge those who work hard among you, who care for you in the Lord, and who admonish you. Hold them in the highest regard and love because of their work. Live in peace with each other. So here, There's first of all, the responsibilities of your leaders that I'm going to cover, and then we'll get to the other part of it. In this section, we see that what the leaders do for you and what you in turn do for them. On the one hand, your leaders are to work hard among you. That's their job. The point behind this is that leaders, and in this day and age, I guess it's specifically pastors, should be busy and active in their role, doing what pastors do. What pastors do differs from church to church and pastor to pastor. For me, the work of being a pastor is primarily expressed in studying and preparing stuff to teach you on a Sunday morning. But I do like to hang around with you too. I spend a lot of time thinking and studying and teaching. And that's primarily the way I pastor. But I do other things too. But different leaders in different positions within the church will express what that means in different ways. So Larry and Joe are elders in the church, and they don't always... Larry sometimes will teach, Joe not so much. but they still do their role in leadership as well, and they do it in different ways. So In other words, there's not one way that church leaders do the work of leading a church. It's different from person to person and situation to situation. So there's a variety of ways to do that. The second is they're to care for you in the Lord. This not only identifies the leaders that leaders are in mind here, it also partially defines the ministry, that it's to care for the people that they deal with. So the characteristic of the ministry is Christ-likeness. That's how the ministry is done. The goal is love others as Christ would. So that's the nature of the church leadership, to love you as Christ would love you. I've spent a lot of time explaining to you that Christ's love isn't just to make you happy all the time. So keep that in mind, because the third thing that church leaders do is admonish you. Part of the leadership role is to provide warning and correction when it's due. You know, if there's something that's out of line in a serious way that it needs to be addressed, the leaders do that. And we've had to do that over the years. Not very often, but a few times with a few people we've had to address something. Primarily when it's very significant, when it's damaging a family, it's damaging the church body. The Greek word means to impart understanding. Let me explain that to you. It's designed to correct while not embittering or provoking. So we want to provide the correction, but not make you hate us in the process. You might hate us in the process, but that's your problem. We're not to make you hate us by the way in which we do it. So I try to, as much as possible, provide a correct understanding in church, to provide a correct understanding in the teaching, so that there's not a need to come and provide a correct understanding on a one-to-one level of what's going wrong. But sometimes that has to be done. In return, the responsibility of the people in the congregation, you acknowledge your leaders. The Greek word for acknowledge is to know them, to take the time to get to know them. It's from the Greek word oida, not the Greek word gnosis. So it's a different Greek word in terms of knowledge. The people were to know their leaders fully and to appreciate what they had in them. It sounds so prideful to have to explain this, but Paul said this, not me. All right, take the time. You know, if you don't know me as well as you'd like to, okay, part of it's my fault, but it's not exclusively my fault. Part of it's your fault too, all right? It's not just me. It's Larry and Joe and the other leaders. You get to do that too. Get to know us. The thing is, I know Larry and Joe very well. And we spend a few hours a week, every week, not just here at church, but then at men's meeting. We spend time together. We come together, and I try to dedicate at least half the time to just talking, just fellowship, just visiting. And then we will read some article or read something, and then we'll discuss it. And the goal of that is discipleship, to help, to make sure and hear how their thinking is. Do they think, you know, the way we're instructed in the Bible to think about issues, about ideas, about whatever the article might be? And they do. And it's great watching them. Second, hold them in the highest regard in love because of their work. Part of the way you regard your church leaders is based on their ministry and not their personality. So you hold them in that high regard and love because of their job, because of their role as elder, as leader, even if you don't like them. So you don't have to like me. You don't have to like everything about my personality, but you still have to love me in the highest regard. Now you really know why people go into ministry, right? You still have to love people even if you don't find that they mesh perfectly with you. I don't mesh perfectly with everybody here. I mesh differently with all of you based on my personality, based on my own values and interests. And that's life. Love isn't based on liking. That is not to say that leaders should not be likable. I think leaders should be likable. But we all get along with others at different levels. It's natural. It's normal. So there shouldn't be a distance between leaders and those they lead. It often happens as a natural consequence of leadership. You know, you just don't want to get too close or whatever. And I don't believe that has any place in the church. I believe that in the church, the difference between the gap between leadership and those being led should be very small, should be a strong relationship and understanding. There's also a strong connection between leading well and being followed well. A person in leadership that's always criticized has a difficult time leading and taking risks. You don't get good leading if you're not a good follower. Because leaders make mistakes. They make mistakes because we try stuff that's new. If you keep doing those same old things that don't work, well, that's not good leadership either. And the last thing, your responsibility is to live in peace with one another. This makes the leader's job so much easier. Paul likely says this because of some of the conflicts that the Thessalonian church was having. And he says it in a way in the Greek that he's not taking sides. He's not choosing one side or over the other, or leaders over congregants or anything like that. If everyone, leaders and followers, are all working together toward peace, a lot of conflict just goes away. That's one thing I really, really like about this church. I really, really like. There's a strong understanding that many of the things that produce conflict in a lot of churches, they just shouldn't become issues here. And that makes, you know, so many of the things that could arise and cause trouble, they just don't get that foothold in people's hearts. So one of the things of living in peace with one another comes out of the beauty of Christian freedom and love. We're free here. We have a lot of freedom. And we also, as a result of that, have a lot of love. So we urge you, brothers and sisters, warn those who are idle and disruptive, encourage the disheartened, help the weak, be patient with everyone, make sure that nobody pays back wrong for wrong, but always strive to do what is good for each other and for everyone else. So first he says, warn those who are idle and disruptive. Last week I said something kind of humorous. I said, if you don't like being here, what did I say? There's the door, right? If you don't like it here, there's lots of churches, you know? Go find one that fits you. That's okay. Because I don't subscribe to the idea that, and a lot of pastors that I know do, that if you come here and then you try to get out, we will discipline you, we'll put guilt trips on you, we'll do a lot of things to try to get you to stay here. I'd like to talk to you and find out why you're going. But if you have good reasons to leave, I will not try to keep you here. I won't do it. I believe the best place you can go is some place that you will have a better place to serve. You shouldn't run away from problems, though. So if you're trying to leave to get away from problems, you'll just take them with you. And it's better to solve those problems. If you have problems in a church, you should seek to solve them or resolve them before you move on. But if there aren't any problems and you believe you would better serve in another congregation, then move on. You do realize that I said better serve rather than better be served. Most of the time people leave churches is they're looking for a place where they can better be served, not better serve. And it's just a matter of where your heart's at. There's a world of difference between those two little phrases. And it highlights the mentality rampant in the church today. The mentality grows from a consumer treatment people have received in churches. Come to our church. Come take advantage of all our services, you know, all the programs we have for you. So consider what is on this short list that Paul has in light of this thing that I just said. First, he says, warn those who are idle and disruptive. The warn word here is the same Greek word for admonish. It's the same word, admonish. Again, this would be the people who had ceased working and expected the rest of the church to support them. That's why he's dealing with the issue of idleness here. It was giving the church a bad reputation in the community. The second thing he says here, encourage the disheartened and the weak. Help the weak. Sometimes life brings discouragement, and you all know what I mean. There's so many ways we get discouraged in life. It happens to all of us. The church family is supposed to be there during that time. When you're disheartened, when you're feeling weak, that's when we want to be there for you. It does imply, of course, that we know that you're disheartened. And if you want to cover it up, and go through it all by yourself, that's your choice, but it's not our fault. There are things we can help with, there's things we can't help with, but we will do what we can to help with the things that we can. Don't pretend that everything's okay when it isn't. Because I know life isn't always okay. So don't pretend. We know that you're not happy all the time. Because you just aren't. Problems are easier to fix when they're small. One thing that's important to know is that regardless of what you're going through, I want you to know this. I will never reject you. I don't know if I've ever rejected anyone in my life. I certainly don't intend to ever start. You might reject me. That I understand. I will never reject you. I don't care what you're going through, and I don't know how bad it is. You will think it's bad. You will think this or that. I don't care what it is. I will never reject you. Ever. I will help you, but you also have to try. Be patient with everyone. You know, we don't all grow at the same rate. We don't all see the same perspective on everything. We look at life differently. We don't all have the right answers. We don't all see the... None of us see the truth perfectly and clearly. We aren't always sensitive as we ought to be. We don't all know your history and your pain. We don't know everything you went through to get to where you are today. We don't magically know your needs and burdens. So sometimes if you're offended or waiting to be loved as you desire to be loved, or if people here don't fully agree with you or each other, you have to be patient. I don't know anyone here that's unloving. I know people here that might not be sensitive all the time, but I don't know anybody here that wouldn't love you if you had a need. That's a huge difference, and you need to keep that in mind. That what you're going through, or if you think somebody said something or did something and it was difficult or offensive, or you thought they said the wrong thing or did the wrong, you probably are misinterpreting who they are. Because I don't know anybody here that's not loving. Do not pay back wrong for wrong, but always strive to do what is good for each other. Even when we're slighted, which is either accidental or deliberate or in our own imaginations, which is a large part of it, we must still love and hold a forgiving attitude in our hearts. Always just waiting for people to change. If you think you've been wronged, then the worst thing you can do is try to get even by wronging someone back. That is absolutely the worst thing you can do. It destroys relationships and it makes reconciliation more difficult. So keep short accounts with one another. If someone is doing something that truly offends you, don't hold it all in and let it build up. You might want to run it past me first, though. It's like, I think this person did this bad thing to me, and I'm going to go tell them off. No, you're not. You're going to go talk to them about it. But I want to help you prepare for that. And I'm willing to be there if you want to talk to somebody. You don't need to do it by yourself. I will not send you into a difficult situation alone if you want somebody with you. Most of the time, small things can be settled because they're really small things. But when they're not dealt with, they build up until they're an avalanche of small things. And that's what crushes people. If someone is truly hostile toward you here, I want to know about it. Because that's about the only thing you can do wrong here. That's about the only thing you can really do wrong here is be really unloving. I mean, like in an overt, super negative way. I want to help address that. Hostility does not usually stay aimed at one person. It usually indicates an attitude that will grow. They won't just be mad at you. They will eventually be mad at me too. It always comes back to the pastor. I guarantee it. A heart full of love loves to give the benefit of the doubt to people rather than become offended. Is it easier to love those who love you or harm you? Jesus asked that question, didn't he? Which is easier, to love those who do good to you or to love those who harm you? No one knows the answer. I'll give you a hint. It's easier to love people who love you, obviously. Be people who love one another, and it will become easier to love one another. The more you love one another, the easier it is for people to love you back, which means you'll keep loving them back more. Love really is something that can accelerate. So be kind and loving and do good, especially when you think someone has slighted you. You were probably wrong thinking negative about what they did anyway. It's probably just a misunderstanding, or it's just their personality. It wasn't personal. It's just them. It's okay. If somebody truly did do something wrong to you and you love them back, you know what will happen? They will be convicted of what they did. They will be convicted, and they'll change, and they will want to make that right with you. Now, remember that I said a church is about a family. It's all about family. This is family. This is what real families are supposed to look like. Yeah, I don't know what your family looked like growing up or anything like that. But I want, you know, my family, my immediate family, you know, we're not perfect. You know that. But we have a lot of fun. And I want us to have fun. And I think a church should be a fun place. I think God has a great sense of humor. Not everybody thinks God has a sense of humor. And that's okay. That's just one of those differences of opinions. I think God has a sense of humor. It's a place of loving one another. It's a place of training. It's a place of growing together. It's a place of bearing one another's burdens. That's what family's about. That's what church is about. Over and over and over again, Paul impresses that upon the people in the New Testament. The church is about being family. It's about being family. All of the previous points are things that you deal with in family, and loving families deal with. All of the above behaviors are to be modeled after God's actions toward us. He warns us. He encourages us. He's patient with us. The only difference between him and us is he does it right all the time. We get confused. We're not so bright. We try our best. Community is a gift that's given to us, but we have to protect it and preserve it. And we can only do that by being like the one who gave us the gift. We only live in community and love the way God wants us to is when we're like Christ. That's the only way it works. That's why there's one rule in the kingdom, love. And when you stop loving, you have to go out the door. That's the only thing. Is, you know, if you're hostile and mean and nasty, that's the only reason I'm going to give you a visit and say you need to change. And there's the door if you don't want to change. Because I know what that does to churches. But other than that, you have so much freedom, so much, you know, in what you want to believe or difference of opinions or difference in personality. Because the consequence of breaking the rule is to be forgiven. We will forgive so much here. And I want you to know that as well. Lord, we thank you for the freedom that we have, freedom from sin, freedom from law, freedom from so much that we have in Christ because of the cross. We also thank you for the pardon that we receive from you. There's no fear of wrath, no fear of guilt. There's no need for guilt in our lives, but a joyous knowing you. It was to walk in that here as a church family in relationships that grow stronger every day, every week, every month, every year. That we truly would bless you by the way that we live here. Amen.